Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 43. My name is John. Ain't found a way to kill me yet. Eyes burn with stinging sweat. Seems every path leads me to nowhere. A few years ago, Kelsey Grammer had a short-lived sketch show. It didn't last very long, because it really wasn't very good, but one particular sketch stuck in my head. It started with a small group of war protesters gathered on a sidewalk with their signs. If I remember correctly, they were shouting the now classic line from the Edwin Starr song, "War! What is it good for? Absolutely nothing." Someone comes along and mentions the Revolutionary War that won America's freedom from the British Empire. So the group changes their chant to something verbose like, "War! What is it good for? Absolutely nothing, except the Revolutionary War that gave us independence." Then somebody cites the Civil War that freed the slaves. So they modify their slogan again. The sketch cuts forward to this ridiculously long chant of all the wars or results of wars that have been beneficial. I used to be a full-bore hawk. I believed whatever actions the United States military was undertaking, it was for the greater good, and that the Tree of Liberty is watered with the blood of patriots and so forth. I no longer have such a blanket belief. On the other hand, I do think some wars are beneficial and, on a rare occasion, are unavoidable. I think that fighting against tyranny is a good thing. It makes sense for the United States to want to protect the United States. But where do we draw the line? We fight wars in this modern time under the guise of America's best interests. But it looks more like we're fighting other people's wars for them. Does that mean that the toughest kid on the block has an obligation to fight for all the other kids? What wars should the United States be involved in? What is our obligation to the rest of the world? Under what situations should the United States go to war? The United States has been under a steady stream of wars for generations now. The latest proposal is to send military strikes against Syria. The debate around this has shown just how far we have deviated from our course as a nation. The players may have shifted allegiances over the past decade, but the idiocy remains the same. And not even the commander-in-chief is immune from the idiocy. Let me just give you a few excerpts from his September 10th speech. "Let me make something clear. The United States military doesn't do pinpricks. Even a limited strike will send a message to Assad that no other nation can deliver. I don't think we should remove another dictator with force. We learned from Iraq that doing so makes us responsible for all that comes next." Interesting. So, according to the president, we are responsible for what comes next in Iraq because we removed that dictator by force. A well-deserved jab at the previous administration. But what about Libya? where the current administration ousted the dictator by force. What are the chances he will take responsibility for that? I mean, you don't think we should remove another dictator with force? Just the last one you remove by force, and then that's it. Just like an addict. One more, and then we'll quit. But here's the telling quote. "We don't dismiss any threats, but the Assad regime does not have the ability to seriously threaten our military. Any other retaliation they might seek is in line with threats we face every day." They don't have the ability to seriously threaten us. If they do retaliate, it's just the same old that happens every day. They can't do anything to us, yet you want to bomb them. Why? Over 100,000 Syrians have died in this civil war in the past 2 years. Why must we intervene now? To save face. Also in his speech he said, "And in 1997, the United States Senate overwhelmingly approved an international agreement prohibiting the use of chemical weapons, now joined by 189 governments that represent 98% of humanity." So, because of a promise made 16 years ago, two presidential administrations ago, we are obligated to do something against a user of chemical weapons? Why can't the other 189 governments build a force to go against Syria? Why does the United States have to get involved? But because there's pictures this time of the horrors from the chemical attacks? Yes. Yes, they were horrific. Is horror a justification for an attack? I recently had a Facebook conversation with an acquaintance. I think it's typical of the early reaction to the threats of attacks on Syria. Gina's going to take the place of the person who responded to me after I wrote this. "What's happening in Syria is horrible. War always is. But Syria has not attacked the United States. It is their civil war. We have no business involving troops in their conflict, no matter how much our politicians ache to be the world police and stretch our military even thinner. Since Syria has not attacked us, and we have no justification to start military action, the fact that this or any president has decided to ask Congress first for permission to go into Syria is immaterial. This is akin to a burglar ringing your doorbell and asking to be let in before he robs you blind."
I disagree. With great power comes great responsibility. Evil only needs one thing to succeed, and this is for good men to stand by and do nothing. Did we learn nothing in the last 100 years? Look at World War I and World War II. We buried our head in the sand when it could have made a difference. How many lives would have been spared if we had stood up to be counted?
The responsibility of the United States is to the United States. And simply wielding power does not justify its use to attack any injustice we feel like attacking, real or perceived. We are justified to protect ourselves like we did in World War II, also the last time we went to war using the proper constitutional requirements. But it is not our responsibility to become involved in a matter that has nothing to do with us. We are supposed to be a republic, not an empire throwing its weight around. History has shown us that path leads to ruin. You ask how many lives could be spared? I would ask how many lives have died and will die because we have already interfered where we don't belong. People are going to die whether or not we take action. We shouldn't be exacerbating the problem.
I don't see it as exacerbating the problem. Isolationism doesn't work. We should have gotten involved in World War II much sooner, but we didn't. We can't just allow atrocities to occur and say it's not our problem. Like it or not, we are a superpower, and we have an obligation. And Bush Sr. set the stage to make us the police. In fact, that was exactly what he said when Desert Shield became Desert Storm. I don't like that we are in this position, but to stand by is worse.
So because someone in the past put us on the wrong path, it is now an acceptable option to perpetuate the wrong? If you're okay with following the Romans and the British into the annals of failed empires, then enjoy. There is always the choice to break a bad cycle. There is always the option to say no to something you say you don't like. At any point, someone could take a stand to stop the madness, but our government and compliant citizens have made the lazy decision to continue this foolishness at our expense. No wonder we are in this situation, and no surprise when it takes us further to ruin. Our government is hell-bent on saving the world at any cost to its own citizens. There is no guarantee that our interference will make things better. You look at our interference with the rest of the Muslim world, and you can easily make the case we've made it worse. And that's where the conversation ended. The sad irony is, this person I had the conversation with is a liberal Democrat zombie who spent the first decade of the new millennium complaining about the warmonger Bush. Illegal wars. The world hates us because we interfere everywhere. Blame Bush. Hell, he even blames this on Bush Sr. Always skimming the surface of the truth, but never having the guts to dive in. Of course, for every Democrat who is suddenly pro-war, because we now have a Democrat administration, there is a Republican who is now against war, because we now have a Democrat administration. There's no denying the hypocrisy on both sides. There's also no denying there are oblivious sheep on both sides. Sheep mocking the same 180-degree turn the other side takes, yet refusing to see the same waffling on their own side. The Constitution of the United States specifically states that Congress holds the power to declare war. Article 1, Section 8. Where have you heard that before? So this relatively recent practice of the President sending troops off on short-term military action that turns into years of conflict, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, is wrong. It doesn't matter that you give it another name. It's war. You've turned the United States into the aggressor. You've strayed from the Constitution. There hasn't been a formal and proper constitutional declaration of war since 1942. So, all those Democrats who were pissed off at George Bush 10 years ago because of his illegal war, were right, but for the wrong reasons. If you asked why they called it an illegal war, they sputtered, "Because there weren't any weapons of mass destruction," or "Because it's just war for oil." No, it's because Congress never declared war. So the president, any president, is wrong to send off our military without Congress's declaration, and Congress has deteriorated into this impotent mass of followers who supply the president with whatever funds he needs to kill the bad guys. And peripheral damage and deaths to innocents be damned. Of course, the Obama supporters are smug because the president asked Congress to support his attack on Syria. So now we're supposed to suck his dick because he deigns to finally follow the Constitution for something during his presidency? No. Tell me what Syria has done to the United States. I mean, yeah, the U.S. government has said they won't tolerate chemical weapons. And if we don't intervene, the government will look like they're bluffing. So sending drones off to kill people is okay if we have to do it to back up our tough talk? Our pride will be hurt if we don't? We have to keep our word because evil wins when good men do nothing? There were 189 other countries in that resolution. Why do we have to be the ones to sacrifice? Why can't they be the ones to do something? And hey, here's an idea for our government. Before you spend billions to back up your threats to other countries, how about you start keeping your word to the American people? You took an oath to protect the Constitution. You're not backing up those promises. You get your shit together before you start trying to be the world's police. How can we turn a blind eye to the injustices in Syria? Who says we have to? There are humanitarian efforts to help them and to help those trying to flee the country. Let's do whatever we can to help them get out, short of starting another war. Because the obvious question is, why not also help all the other places where atrocities are being committed? If we need to go after Syria, why not all the other places around the world that are just as bad, if not worse? How many more military strikes in how many more countries until your conscience is clear? Where does it end? Think of all the wars, the insurrections, and conflicts around the world. The atrocities don't end there. What about the dictators starving their citizens? What about the human trafficking? What about the child prostitution? What about all those things that humans do to other humans that make us wonder if we even deserve to continue as a species? Will the great superpower of the United States step into that next? You see how well government intervention is done everywhere else. And tell me again how much better things will be once we interfere. How do you know? How do you know the over 4,000 people killed in Iraq in the last 6 months would still be dead had we not invaded? Prove to me that the over 4,000 people would not still be alive. Barack Obama said in his speech that when we oust a dictator by force, we are responsible for whatever happens afterward. Their blood is on our hands. Our government has put that blood on our hands. Just like we're responsible for what happens in Libya, even though no boots were on the ground there. Though some would argue the methods the United States use required boots to be on the ground. Oh, that would mean that the government was lying to us, and they never do that, right? Don't you just adore that phrase, no boots on the ground? It makes it seem like, this is no big deal. We'll fly some planes or some drones, and nobody on our side will be hurt, so that makes it all good. One of the outstanding memes that came from this debate talks about a small attack force in targeted strikes with no boots on the ground, just like is promised if we do decide to go into Syria. This meme shows a picture of a small attack force in a targeted strike with no boots on the ground. It's a picture of the attack on Pearl Harbor. When it happened to us, it was an act of war. When it happened to us, our attackers were viewed as instigators. It doesn't matter what we say, or rather what our government says. The people being attacked will view it as the United States instigating war. Again, in yet another Muslim country. The enemy of your enemy is not necessarily your friend. Who are these Syrian rebels? Well, there's elements of Al-Qaeda in there. I thought that's who we're supposed to be fighting against these past 12 years. Now we're going to support them? I thought it was treasonous to aid and abet the enemy. You know, when Nixon said, when the president does it, it's not illegal, everybody was aghast. Now, sitting presidents actually do something illegal, and the supporters just nod in unison and follow along. They're using chemical weapons. They're not using chemical weapons. They are using chemical weapons. It's not the Syrian government using chemical weapons. It's the rebels. It's definitely the Syrian government. That's why we have to attack them now. Or is it? There's a video that it might be the rebels. Or is it a fake? Is it doctored? You know, as trite as the argument is, if this had been a Republican administration with the WMD story changing daily, the media, Democrat Party, and every anti-war collectivist would be in full-bore protest mode. Fortunately, there are some who are refusing to fall into lockstep with the rest. Well, maybe falling into lockstep isn't the best term, because that would mean that most of the anti-war collectivists would be visible. You gotta love all those people who so fervently cried imperialism when a Republican was in office, and who now have disappeared back into their cushy little homes. There's a whole lot of nothing coming out of them these days, because they won't stand for their principles if it means compromising their support for their latest demigod. I guess so long as Muslims die by drones instead of at the hands of soldiers, imperialism is okay for those people. Here's a simple principle. Maybe even they could understand. You don't go to war unless you are attacked. I know. There are some who would argue that a credible threat is reason enough. But a credible threat is not a guaranteed attack. How many times has North Korea promised our annihilation? Do you really think they could actually pull it off? Iran may get nuclear capability. Would that be worrisome? Yeah, sure. There's no denying that. But does that guarantee an attack. No. Is it a risk? Yes, very much so. Some would even say a foolish risk. But what good would sanctions, and possibly war, do other than to hurt the very people who could oust the current regime? Why risk our citizens, our soldiers, our children, or our families on yet another war with a Muslim country? And oh, they love to mention children, to sway emotions toward their cause for war. That was one of the first things out of the president's mouth during his Syria speech. Those children over in Syria are in peril. So you American kids have to risk your mommy or daddy soldier who may or may not come home from this war. Or worse, your mommy or daddy soldier has to live with the guilt of sending a drone strike against a target on false information that leads to Syrian children being killed. And while I'm talking about our soldiers, is it too much to ask that our government, before it sends our fathers, our mothers, our brothers, our sisters, our sons, our daughters off to some other part of the world with the very real possibility of death, that we follow the Constitution before asking them to sacrifice? Can you prove the countries we are attacking first attacked us? Can you give a legitimate reason for war? Not, they may or may not have scary weapons, or they're threatening us, or their leader may be crazy enough to fire missiles. Threats from leaders are not legitimate reasons to instigate war. If they were, Pakistan would have a legitimate reason to attack us because our president, Barack Obama, threatened military strikes against them. We fucked up. We had a foundation laid of non-intervention. We had a principle of attack only if attacked. Like many of our other principles, we got away from that pretty quick. Now, rather than dismantling the mistake and starting over, we continue to build on mistakes with more mistakes. We now have a derelict structure that is doomed to fail, and still we have people who want to continue to build on mistakes. We don't interfere with the private affairs of other nations. We don't carry out preemptive strikes against another nation just because we're afraid. We don't perpetuate war in a desperate attempt to misdirect attention at the failing government and economy. We must come to the realization that the way our country is acting on the national stage is no different than any other world superpower over the millennia. We said we were gonna be different. We failed. Now, we have a choice to continue and follow those other once great powers into degradation, or we could renew our long-lost promise to be a nation of peace and let other countries learn from and follow our example and lead the world into a true golden age. But I'm not the first to say something along those lines. Gina, would you be so kind as to read sections 3.1 through 3.3 of the Libertarian Party platform?
We support the maintenance of a sufficient military to defend the United States against aggression. The United States should both avoid entangling alliances and abandon its attempts to act as policemen for the world. We oppose any form of compulsory national service. The defense of our country requires that we have adequate intelligence to detect and to counter threats to domestic security. This requirement must not take priority over maintaining the civil liberties of our citizens. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights shall not be suspended even during time of war. Intelligence agencies that legitimately seek to preserve the security of the nation must be subject to oversight and transparency. We oppose the government's use of secret classifications to keep from the public information that it should have, especially that which shows that the government has violated the law. American foreign policy should seek an America at peace with the world. Our foreign policy should emphasize defense against attack from abroad and enhance the likelihood of peace by avoiding foreign entanglements. We would end the current U.S. government policy of foreign intervention, including military and economic aid. We recognize the right of all people to resist tyranny and defend themselves and their rights. We condemn the use of force, and especially the use of terrorism, against the innocent, regardless of whether such acts are committed by governments or by political or revolutionary groups.
Thank you, Gina. See, I found a way to make it work. Americans were attacked. The citizens were shocked. But the attack rallies the population into a spirit of national unity to go after the people who committed the atrocity. So we did. And it was a great source of pride for our armed forces to demolish those who did us wrong. But as time passed, the United States decided to go after another country that had nothing to do with the attack. So Americans started questioning its government's actions in the world as to whether or not it was veiled imperialism. It didn't help that actions by the soldiers, under orders of their superiors, were doing things to the enemy that were far from the noble American soldier the citizens expected. It's okay if you think I'm talking about the events of September 11th, 2001, the subsequent invasion of Afghanistan and later Iraq. It would be easy to assume that, and a very good assumption. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm referring to the events of February 15th, 1898. The sinking of the battleship Maine, and the resulting Spanish-American War, and the later invasion of the Philippines by the United States. We are just going to keep repeating our mistakes until we learn from them. There will always be troubles. There will always be someone who wants to start war. There will come times when a war is unavoidable. But there will be many more times where instigating war will just lead us back to the path we are on now. There will always be the temptation to continue to follow this same path to atrophy every other great power has taken. But there can be a change, not a superficial or fake change, but a real change. With a true shift, this nation could be the phoenix rising out of the ruin it has become. It doesn't even need the status of a world superpower. It needs to stand on real principles and show other countries that doing the right thing will make the world a better place. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.